And you're listening to Unusual Sources here on 93.3 CFMU FM. I'm speaking with Canadian author, journalist, and activist Eve Engler. I should emphasize activist because of some of the more colorful events you've been involved in recently. But I did receive today an email with your latest article, and it immediately caught my attention. It's called United Nations Never Approved Canadian Military Operating Near China. So that's an article that's available on Eve Engler's website, eveengler.com. And it's in probably the articles section or somewhere close to the front there. And so, yeah, I've got it here. And I know it's about the United Nations ostensibly, but it seems to be about confrontation, Canada ramping up its confrontational posture with China. So I was wondering, Eve, we've got, you know, these planes and ships bothering China and the DPRK, and what's causing this confrontation? You know, how did we get to this point where they're talking about UN mission to send ships to go and sail near China?
Well, I think that the US empire has increasingly sees China as a threat, as China has been successful economically in the last couple of decades. And the U.S. would like to try to contain China, and it sees the sort of military and different alliances as the primary way of doing so. And of course, the U.S. has bases all sort of encircling China and all around the region. And the Canadian government, going back at least a decade, the Canadian military was already talking about trying to get a base in Singapore or elsewhere in the region to, as the then head of the Canadian military said, to have gravitas. You had to be in the region, so you had to, you know, sort of be military present. So it's not a new thing, but what we're seeing in recent months. And now officialized in the Indo-Pacific strategy that the Liberals announced about a week ago, is that they are going to be increasing naval vessel patrols in the region. There are already sort of regularly CP-140, the Aurora patrol aircraft, that is in the region, usually based at the American base in Okinawa, Japan, and they are patrolling, probably spying on China and sort of militarily in the region. Often the Canadian naval vessels go through the Taiwan Strait, South China Sea, do alongside American vessels and do sort of provocative maneuvers. Now, the Liberal government, or Trudeau himself, has increasingly tried to kind of suggest that the Canadian military presence is part of a UN mission. He of course doesn't say so directly, but he suggests that that's the case. And a number of media outlets have reported that that's the case. Chinese fighter jets sort of buzzed or intercepted the Canadian patrol aircraft, Six months ago, Trudeau was quoted as saying that the Canadian patrol aircraft was upholding was part of a UN mission upholding UN Security Council sanctions on North Korea. Now, there are UN Security Council sanctions on North Korea, but there is no UN mission. So it's just a U.S. Mission, and the U.S. Sort of, and clearly the Canadian government, try to use the North Korean sanctions as a way to sort of legitimate their military presence on or near Russia or China's territorial waters or airspace, and it's all part of this ramping up of tensions. And again, the Indo-Pacific strategy announced $500 million in Canadian financial financing to military and intelligence operations in the region announced. Mélanie Joly was quoted in today's National Post saying that we're going to try to have three Canadian naval vessels constantly in the region. And it's a dangerous game. Clearly, there's all kinds of other dimensions to this ratcheting up of tensions. But the clear policy is that that China is a threat to U.S. domination, and the Canadian government's prepared to contribute militarily to trying to weaken that threat.
It's hard to imagine a smaller navy taking on such a large navy. It's almost comical, but this is what we do now, I guess. The U.S. tells us to do something suicidal, like arrest Meng Wanzhou or whatever, and we just go do it. But I mean, yeah, I guess you're saying it's, you know, we are there. We have patrol planes. Now we're talking about sending naval forces over to the other side of the planet. And I guess, as you said, it's allegedly to enforce a U.N. mission. But just if you could clarify this more, there is no United Nations military mission to send military hardware to the area, right? Like they never said, hey, guys, we have to set up a military operation.
No, the Security Council has not approved any mission. The Security Council has approved sanctions on North Korea. And so that's absolutely clear. And like I said, there's been a number of media reports. Trudeau's language is sort of like a little bit vague. So he's sort of confusing the media into reporting that there is a UN mission when there isn't a UN mission. So he's clearly playing sort of loose with the facts, obviously understanding what he's doing, which is Canadian public is more likely to support Canadian naval aircraft patrols if it was part of a UN mission than if it's just part of belligerent US targeting of China. So when he suggests it's part of a UN mission that the Chinese are intercepting Canadian aircraft, of course that makes China look worse than if it's China responding to belligerent US-Canadian actions. And I should say another part to it. Melanie Joly in today's National Post, this isn't in my article, but Melanie Joly talks about enforcing the international rules order.
Okay.
Canadian naval vessels are there. But she simultaneously says that Canadian naval vessels are patrolling with U.S. Naval vessels. Now, of course, U.S. is one of the only countries that hasn't signed the United Nations Law of the Sea. So the idea, or hasn't ratified at least, I believe they actually have signed it, they've never ratified it. So the idea that Canada is patrolling with the U.S. Navy to uphold the international waters when it's the U.S. is one of the only countries that hasn't actually ratified this convention is reflective of just this, the fact that this isn't to be taken seriously. This is just sort of window dressing. And so on one hand, they have this Operation Neon that they kind of imply is part of a UN mission dealing with sanctions on North Korea. And on the other hand, they talk about upholding international law around, patrolling disputed waters in the South China Sea. But yet they are actually doing so with a country that hasn't signed the United Nations Law on the Sea. So obviously most Canadians don't, and even the reporters, obviously they don't take the time to mention these important details that provide better context to what was actually happening. So the politicians understand that they're sort of implying something, not necessarily directly lying, but implying something that is untrue. But that's quite effective when you have a media that's prepared to just sort of regurgitate what the politicians are saying.
Yeah, we hide behind the UN fig leaf a lot, like in Libya, when we said we were enforcing a resolution that did not give us the authority to bomb targets in Libya and institute a regime change. But of course, that's what Canada and the US did. It's the good old rules-based order, as you're pointing out, where the U.S. has not even, signed on to the rules about the ocean in that area, but they're going to dictate, what the rules are. So, it's all part of a big story, which is that we're getting more confrontational with Russia and China, even as things get more and more dangerous and unpleasant for everyone. You mentioned in the article that, the Canadian military and politicians are talking as if, we're just heading towards confrontation and war. China wants to take part of the north from us, China and Russia. So, I mean, China's the one over here, I guess, is the way they're talking.
Yeah, these were pretty remarkable comments by Wayne Eyre, who's the head of the Canadian military. About 2 months ago, he told Parliament that Russia and China consider themselves at war with the West, and that they were looking for regime expansion, as he put it. And then 10 days later or so, he followed it up by saying that Canada's control over the North was tenuous, and that China and Russia were going to increasingly sort of threaten Canada's grip over territories that we should be clear are not that Canada's already, you know, colonized. So the Inuit people should be first and foremost in charge of determining what goes on there. But it doesn't jive with reality, of course, of the military strength of the different forces and the military posture. Of course, you know, US has bases all around China and Russia, and Canada likewise, whereas China and Russia don't have bases and troops stationed all around North America. But the head of the Canadian military, and I think it's important to understand this with China, on the China question, there really is significant division within the ruling class in this country. There's a big chunk of the corporate sector that has been making money in China, that has trades with China, that, you know, operations in the country, and they see this massive market that there's a lot of money to be made from. The hawkish position on China is coming from the military CSIS communication security establishment, those elements of the Canadian government that are most integrated with the U.S. With their U.S. counterparts, as well as of course the arms companies that always want more conflict and are also well integrated with the U.S. Military industrial complex. So there's this sort of division, and Trudeau has been a bit more on the fence in terms of getting aggressive with China, and the military and the CSIS and others have been really putting a lot of pressure on Trudeau to get more aggressive. So when the head of the Canadian military says that, you know, Russia and China see themselves at war with Canada, we of course need to, you know, be defensive and be concerned and see, you know, concerned about their taking over the North. When CSIS, as they did a month ago, claims that China interfered in Canada's elections in 2019 and, you know, is buying politicians and this sort of nefarious Chinese plot against Canada, again, that, you know, puts pressure on Trudeau to try to act tough, which he did at the G20, and then there was that conflict with the Chinese president over this whole question of foreign interference. So I think that there is a division within the ruling elite in this country. Increasingly, the China hawks are in the ascendance, and I think this recent Indo-Pacific strategy demonstrates that. Obviously, Chrystia Freeland's speech at the Brookings Institute about 6 weeks ago, where she talked about decoupling from China and the whole question of what she calls friend shoring, is also reflective of that. And they're putting pressure on the corporate sector that, you know, wants to do business with China, to decouple, to break away, to lessen their involvement in the Chinese market. And this is not coming from the perspective of, you know, sort of, you know, weakening corporate power, as, you know, the anti-corporate globalization movement may have been pushing for, you know, two decades ago. This is coming from the perspective of apocalyptic kind of a battle between the U.S. empire and China, and, you know, containing the most populous nation in the world. And it's all very dangerous. It's troubling for dealing with things like the climate crisis. It's troubling even for, we see the biodiversity negotiations taking place in Montreal right now, And there's stories about the tensions between China and Canada and how that's undermining some of the negotiations. So this is the last thing that humanity needs. We don't need this sort of global conflict between the two most powerful countries. We need international cooperation now more than ever to deal with the most existential crisis, which is the climate crisis. But the forces of empire in this country are pushing in the complete opposite direction of more and more ratcheting up of tensions.
Well, it's just that, isn't it? Forces of empire, whatever domestic, you know, disagreements or factions or interests people have in Canada, it seems the United States is very strong at simply imposing its agenda on Canada. And yes, it's very dangerous. And if people had the time to think about a lot of these things, you know, they don't like where things are headed, but there's not a lot of voice for ordinary people. But there is a voice for ordinary people in yourself and the work you do. And, you know, people can go to eveengler.com, Y-V-E-S-E-N-G-L-E-R.com. And let's see, I got that right. It's .com, right? Eveengler.com? Yes, it's not .ca. I was not sure about that. But the thing is, of course, you have been writing a long series of books on Canadian foreign policy, primarily and corporate interests in Canada and abroad. And there's been a new book, which I got to say, we sent out a newsletter in the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War late November, end of fall newsletter. And one of the things we mentioned, we heard about a small gathering in Guelph to launch your book. And the organizer wanted us to ask if anyone was interested in registering to go for it. So we asked if, you know, hey, we said, anyone want to register for this? You have to register beforehand. And we got a number of emails very quickly. People wanted to register. It turns out they thought it was online, so they could, you know, go to the book launch from British Columbia or Halifax or something. In general, they could not attend. But there's a surprising amount of interest. I guess it shouldn't be surprising with all that's going on, because this new book, it's listed in your books section, and it's called Stand on Guard for Whom? A People's History of the Canadian Military. Well, that seems really appropriate the way things are going. What's this book about?
Well, it's there are like thousands of books about different elements of Canadian military history, the Canadian military. I think this is the first book that looks at the institution from the perspective of those who have been disenfranchised by the institution, both domestically and internationally. And so it delves into all kinds of history, the history of the roots of the military is the force, the British force that conquered these territories. It has a, you know, history of Canadian warfare. It has chapters looking at how the military was used to suppress strikes, the militia in the late 1800s, early 1900s, the history of Canada's role in chemical and biological weapons, the culture of the military, the sexism and racism and the authoritarian culture of the military, the history of Canadian gunboat diplomacy and Canadian naval vessels being sent to intimidate countries to pay back loans to the Royal Bank, the Canadian Special Forces, what we know that's on the public record around Canadian Special Forces being deployed often secretly. And also just the sort of economic and political power of the military. It's the biggest public relations, has biggest public relations capacities of any institution in the country. It also has the biggest intelligence gathering capacities of any institution. So it's a massive, it's just a gigantic institution. And so the book, you know, delves into that. It's probably the biggest book that I've written, and it's a sort of a broad critical overview of the Canadian military and military history.
Well, you've certainly created an audience that's interested in the book from the kind of reaction we received when we sent out the notice of the small gathering in Guelph. We're actually looking at launching it in Hamilton. There's some students on campus at McMaster. They want to get involved and talk about geopolitical affairs, peace, war, and we're trying to see if that can be set up for a campus physical launch that everyone can attend, community, campus, whoever. So that's something to think about sometime in January. The details are tentative. Obviously, we have to work some things out, but that's something we'll be letting you know about if we can get that up and running. So that's great. Thanks for letting us know about that. The truth is, if you scroll down Eve Engler's website, there's articles on every subject of interest to us here in Hamilton, from Israel and Palestine to Haiti, to the conflict Russia-Ukraine, all the way to Iran and networks that exist in Canada. It's very interesting. And we, as I said before the interview, we're behind on this and covering some of this. So we're going to have to get back to you on some of that. But people should look for that ahead. So Eves, I appreciate that you could be here. Thanks for taking the time with us. And people should go check out the book and maybe think about going to the book launch if you don't have that book yet. So again, thanks very much for being with us on the program today, Eve.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for all the good work that the Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War is doing.